taking my day. I turned it to night, who turned out the light? Blood hangs from the beams, I don't know what it means, but it's too much to bear. If I had taken my time, counted my steps, I might have no regrets. You might still be here yet, and not in my dreams. It's too late to care.
Here at KDVS, we're searching for a few public affairs hosts.
Imagine talking on air with underrepresented communities,
reviewing movies,
or even singing live karaoke. In case you're wondering, anyone is eligible.
And as you can tell, the possibilities are endless.
If you're interested, please email us at programming@kdvs.org.
That message about public affairs shows is so true. Who knew you could even do a show where you play chess? Talk about chess. That's crazy.
Incredible.
Unrealized potential of KDVS. It's so beautiful.
That's what we always like to say here at Let's Chess.
What do we like to say?
This is Let's Chess.
This is Let's Chess. We do like to say that here, yeah.
Yep. The following views presented in this half hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. This is Let's Chess. I'm DJ Sunday Gravy.
I'm DJ Let's Chess.
It's very nice to meet you, DJ Let's Chess. What brings you on the show?
What if one of us was like DJ Let's, the other was Chess, and then it's like a Run DMC situation?
This is terrible. Do you want to be Let's or Chess?
I'm fine with being Let's, honestly.
I kind of want it was like I in Chess. I mean, yeah, honestly, that's fine.
Did you want to be DJ Let's?
Yeah, a little bit. It's okay, kind of good.
Sure, I'll be DJ Chess.
That's kind of hard. Think about it.
DJ Let's, I know. Yeah. I thought so, too.
Mm-hmm.
People may want Chess because that's like the more, it's the bigger
it's like
word.
A name yeah,
brand, right? But
know.
Let's has a lot more charm to it.
Yeah,
like,
I think
Let's
so.
What?
Let's like, what? Let's Chess.
Let's Chess.
There you go.
There you go. You can't Chess without the Let's.
It's true.
Grammatically.
Yeah, exactly. What are you going to do? Just Chess?
What?
Uh-huh.
That's not a sentence.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you can say Let's as a standalone sentence, actually.
Let's.
Yeah.
That's true. So.
You can't say Chess.
I guess, but okay.
I mean, if you're answering a question.
Yeah, Chess.
Like, what game are you playing?
Chess.
Like, yeah, sure, but lame sentence.
Dang. Yeah. But Let's isn't?
No, Let's is
no,
awesome.
No, Let's is nice, yeah. Let's is good.
Someone can be like, Chess? Question mark, and
Let's.
Then you're like, Let's. I guess in that scenario, Chess is also.
Chess is also in the sentence, yeah.
Do you want to play Chess? Let's. Yeah.
Let's.
There you go. This week, we're instead of playing chess, we will be having a chess discussion.
A discussion about chess.
You know, as two, I'd say, prolific online chess players.
Yeah.
Prolific.
World-renowned.
World-renowned, famous. Yeah, it goes.
Demon of the rankings. Go ahead, tell them the rankings.
I believe my ranking now is 839.
Oh, I thought you were going to give us, like, you know, Magnus Carlsen, number one. Like,
oh,
Picaro,
like
number
that?
Two.
Oh,
DJ Chess, number three.
Oh, you're putting yourself ahead of me?
No, I just put, you're DJ Chess.
Oh, am I DJ Chess?
I thought you just gave me a DJ
Let's.
Oh, you're
right. You're right. I did.
Oh,
yeah.
My bad.
I was.
We can switch off depending on the
day.
We
can both just be DJ Let's, honestly.
Okay.
If we both want it.
Yeah, sure.
No,
for sure.
No, I'll be DJ Chess. yeah, global rankings. It goes Magnus Carlsen, DJ Letts, Hikaru Nakamura, DJ Chess, Vishwanathan Anand, you know, and just a couple other guys, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Who
I don't know. I kind of only get ranked up against those.
Yeah.
Like that handful of people.
Yeah. This is a true story, actually. That fifth one, he was like the international champion, the Indian guy, when I was like a little kid. And he was from the same region of India as my family. And so it was like a really big deal. Like growing up, we would talk, like we would read the newspaper and see when he won like a big tournament, like Tata Steel or something like that, right? And so because like he was from that area and I used to spend summers, what's up?
How regional are we talking? Like
Tamil Nadu.
Okay.
Like same city, all that.
Got it.
Yeah. So because of that, there was like kind of a chess craze in the region at the time. Where, like, I learned how to play chess in India because everyone, every, like, Tamil kid wanted to play chess and be like Vishwanathan Anand.
Yeah.
And so my grandpa, he used to be nice at chess. My older cousin, he's really nice at chess.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I think he has, like, an 1800 ELO in bullet or something like that. Like, pretty nice for, like, your commoner, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was, like, 7 years old, my grandpa took my brother, not my cousin who's 1800 in bullet, but my younger cousin who's a year younger than me, my brother and I. I don't know if I already said my brother. But either way, the three of us to this like kind of like chess class. And I didn't know it at the time, but it was taught by this really old guy. And I was like, oh, why is this old dude teaching us chess? It turns out it was like the childhood coach.
Whoa.
Of the guy who was like number one in the world at the time, because dude didn't move. Like he was just like the coach. He taught him how to play when he's a kid.
Yeah.
Right? He wasn't going to like tournaments with him and like, you know, studying with him. But I was like, whoa, that's pretty crazy. Now, because of that, I'm one person removed from this guy, which makes me two people removed from like Magnus Carlsen.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. So
incredible.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
He's pretty nice, the old guy. He was actually very sweet, but I wasn't good at chess, and I don't think he liked that.
He didn't like that?
No.
No. You weren't like a good enough subject.
No, I wasn't. I'm definitely not a chess prodigy. What's crazy about chess is that, like, if you're not like 12 years old and a grandmaster, like, you're done
for. No, your career's kind of over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
I never got started.
You know, what's his name? Like, Levi Roseman or whatever? Gotham City Chess? Gotham Chess?
He's cooked. He's never gonna have a career in chess.
Yeah. Hikaru, he's like an international master. Hikaru was talking about him and he was like, oh, he'll never be a grandmaster. He's just too old at this point. He's 27.
Like, well, I think he is a grandmaster now.
Is he really?
I might be wrong, but I think he recently became.
Can you fact check that?
Yeah, I could be totally wrong. What's his name?
Levi Roseman, I wanna say.
Oh, Roseman.
Roseman.
O Z. He's a master.
Yeah.
Okay, international master.
Yeah, but not a grandmaster.
Not a grandmaster, yeah.
I think the threshold is like, what, 2,600 or 2,700?
Don't you have to win in a certain condition?
You have to beat a certain amount of grandmasters, too.
Okay.
I think the thing is, because he's like such a chess nerd, Levi, like people say he plays super, super conservatively when he gets matched up against like the chess grandmasters that he like makes YouTube videos about and stuff.
Sure, yeah.
But he's pretty cool if you're like trying to learn about chess. Like I enjoyed watching his videos when I was getting back into chess.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this week, you know, talking about online chess and you know, Lee Chess, there's chess.com, there's other websites that are far less relevant. Point being, all of them, you interact with this thing. Bots.
It's not just humans that play chess these
humans.
Days. There's also robots.
Dead internet theory, you know?
Dead internet theory?
Do you know what that is?
No.
Oh, it's actually, not to derail us, but at this point, this is just us talking.
This is just talking about chess.
Yeah. Dead internet theory is this idea that at a certain point, the internet will reach a point where, that's a redundant sentence, but there will reach like a bright line where the internet is predominantly occupied in terms of like social activity.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
By like artificial like intelligence or whatever, like
sure.
Just not real people, right? And so it's the dead internet theory because the internet functions autonomously through bots and not through humans. So the like actual life
sure
that participates in the internet would be gone. And so,
Stockfish will play Stockfish.
Yeah, Stockfish will play Stockfish at a certain point.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But yeah, we were wanting to talk about, or I guess, do you want to talk about the, like, do we want to go chronologically and talk about the Turk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I think it's a really interesting story. We can talk about it. Yeah, let's switch seats really quick. So, for those who did not hear DJ Sunday Gravy in my show Monday 4 to 6 a.m., the Turk is essentially, it's kind of like the first automated chess player. It's like one of the first like big chess mysteries, you know, and it definitely had some notoriety for its time, just given people didn't know how it worked. So I'm just going to kind of go through a summary of it and, we can just talk about it.
And I'll just be amazed as it happens.
So, the Turk was built by a man named Wolfgang von Kempelen, who lived from 1734 to 1804. And it was originally constructed and unveiled in 1770 to impress Empress Maria Theresa of Austria.
Oh, I didn't realize it was a like something to dazzle the royalty with.
Oh, yeah, very much so. So I believe he was like a patron of hers, or like something. He had some sort of affiliation with Empress Theresa of Austria. And so in 1769, there was this showcase. Like, you know how we have the Chicago World's Fair where people show off inventions, stuff like that? Similar thing was happening in Prague. Prague is in Austria. Or Vienna. Vienna. And so he, like, people were really impressed by this, like, guy doing, like, magic with magnets or something like that. And so he was like to the Empress, like, give me a year. Give me a year, you know? Like, I'm going to have something good. You know, and so a year later at this Vienna display, he presents. Okay, here. So I'll just read this excerpt from the Wikipedia page. The Turk made its debut in 1770 at Schönbrunn Palace, which is Empress Theresa's palace in Austria. About 6 months after Pelletier, who is the guy who did all the magnets. After Pelletier's act, Kempelen addressed the court presenting what he had built and began the demonstration of the machine and its parts. With every showing of the Turk, Kempelen began by opening the doors and drawers of the cabinet, allowing members of the audience to inspect the machine. And so, you're probably wondering, cabinets, whatever, whatever. So what is the Turk? The Turk is essentially a mannequin attached to a cabinet that has a chessboard on top of it.
And like a table.
It's like a table, yeah. And the Turk is attached to it directly, I believe. And so it's like the torso of a mannequin. He's dressed like a, you know, stereotypical Turk. He's got a turban and all that. He got the big Ottoman coat. And below, like inside the cabinet, he would open it up before every single show, unveil a lot of really confusing gears and machinery, some like pulleys and stuff like that, that like nobody can look at and understand what it means and immediately. And he would even open the back of it and light a candle.
To turn it on?
No, light a candle so that, and open it from the front as well. So like when he lights the candle from the back, you can see directly through.
Sure.
Right? And so his point was like, there's nothing in here.
Right.
It's just this.
Yeah.
Right? And so then he'd set up the chessboard and the Turk would like activate, essentially, and it would start playing chess. It looked like a mannequin was playing chess.
Sounds so awesome.
Yeah. And so with every showing of the Turk, Kempelen began by opening the doors and drawers of the cabinet, allowing members of the audience to inspect the machine. Following the display, Kempelen would announce that the machine was ready for a challenger. Kempelen would inform the player that the Turk would use the white pieces and have the first move. Note that the convention that white moves first was not yet established. There were not redundant statements. Oh, wow.
That's actually really cool. We should play some games where black gets to go first.
What difference does that make?
Literally nothing.
Yeah. Between moves, the Turk kept its left arm on the cushion. I guess the cushion is like on the table.
Yeah.
The Turk could nod twice if it threatened its opponent's queen, and three times upon placing the king in check. If an opponent made an illegal move, the Turk would shake its head, move the piece back, and make its own move, thus forcing a forfeit of its opponent's move. So if the opponent made an illegal move, the Turk...
It's my turn now.
Yeah, like, no turn for you. Yeah. Louis Dutens, a traveler who observed a showing of the Turk, attempted to trick the machine by giving the queen the move of a knight. But my mechanic opponent... Okay. By trick the machine, quote, by giving the queen the move of a knight, but my mechanic opponent was not to be so imposed upon. He took up my queen and replaced her in the square from which I had moved her, end quote. Kemblin made it a point to traverse the room during the match and invited observers to bring magnets, irons, and lodestones to the cabinet to test whether the machine was run by a form of magnetism or weights. The first person to play against the Turk was Count Ludwig von Cobenzl.
And he got cooked.
Yep. An Austrian courtier at the palace. Along with other challengers that day, he was quickly defeated, with observers of the match stating the machine played aggressively and typically beat its opponents within 30 minutes.
Dang.
Solid. Another part of the machine's exhibition was the completion of the Knight's Tour, a famed chess puzzle. The puzzle requires the player to move a knight across around a chessboard, touching each square once along the way. While most experienced chess players of the time will struggle with the puzzle, the Turk was capable of completing the tour without any difficulty from any starting point via a pegboard used by the operator with the mapping of the puzzle. Oh, okay, never mind. That kind of spoils it. The Turk also had the ability to converse with spectators using a letterboard. The operator... we're not going to explain that part.
Also made artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Could have conversations. He made the first chatbot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, apparently they would say the Turk would, like, taunt its opponents and stuff like that.
It has a double head nod.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Your queen, it's threatened.
Yep. When they put you in check, the three head nod, it's over, bro.
I don't know. I'd be crying.
Mm-hmm. No.
Did they play timed matches back then?
I mean, like, how did they time it? With an hourglass, I guess?
I don't know. Probably not, right?
Yeah.
If they're saying it only took 30 minutes.
Yeah, you know the Turk famously once taunted an opponent so much that the Turk and the opponent threw hands after the match.
Who won?
The Turk, obviously.
Of course! Made out of, like, metal. It's, like, not even... It's not fair.
No, it's not fair. It's not even, like, brass knuckles. It's no. Just brass hands.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
chess boxing with the Turk.
Whoa.
Hear me out. He was before his time.
Before his time, yeah. All right. So, Kemblin ended up taking the Turk on a tour of Europe. It won most of its matches, to my knowledge. It even beat Benjamin Franklin in Paris.
Really?
Fun fact.
Serves him right.
Yep. Get that nerd. But what was it? Yeah, he like beat very famous opponents like... I think the King of Prussia, Benny Frank, of course, amongst many others, like Austrian courtiers, like list goes on. And it's pretty much said that it was essentially undefeated. I think maybe it drew at times, but it seems like the Turk was pretty good. And so no one knew how it worked, right? Like, bear in mind, like, how did robots weren't really like a thing like that at this time, right? Like, this is some pretty strong automation that we didn't see until the 20th century with Deep Blue. So, you know, it's like the 1770s.
It's even crazier than Deep Blue because Deep Blue did not play its own moves. It just came up with them. We'll get to that in a second.
What do you
mean? Like, it's not attached to like
an arm. Yeah, correct. Correct. Yeah, exactly, right?
It doesn't taunt.
No, yeah. Like, you needed a person to play Deep Blue's moves. Correct. Yeah, exactly. So, like, the Turk's ability to not just, create these moves, but then play them directly after, really crazy. People were like, this is some next level magic. A lot of people tried to figure it out. No one seemed to be able to. Then, following the death of Kemblin, the Turk went on to his son, who decided to sell it to a man named Johann Nepomuk Mosel, a Bavarian musician with an interest in various machines and devices. So he ended up taking the machine to North America, and he took it on tour there. And it was, you know, beating a bunch of folks, naturally. The Turk is still the Turk. He somehow figured out how it worked, because Kemblin never explained how it worked to anyone. He died with that knowledge. But Mosel figured it out. And then, upon his... realizing, he's like, hey, I can make some money on this. So even though Kemblin died in 1804, Maltzel in 1826, he's opening up an exhibition. And bear in mind, he's Bavarian, right? So he took a ship to North America, took the Turk around, brought it on tour, similar to how Kempelen took it through Europe. And story actually goes, in Baltimore, the Turk was being set up before its exhibition. And some kids were peeking in to the building, and they claimed to have seen a man getting out of the machine. This was reported in the newspaper, but then was later redacted because there was, like, no way to verify the children's claims. So they're like, hey, this isn't reasonable, like, good reporting. We can't put this out as fact. We can't hurt Mr. Mossel's good name, you know, yeah. The Turk. Little did they know. But then, he even took it to Havana, fun fact.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if... never mind.
What?
I was going to ask if it lines up with certain Cuban grandmasters from the time.
1840s.
Probably does then.
Yeah.
I wonder if it beat any or lost to any. Or maybe a Cuban grandmaster even. Well, I can't. I'm not going to spoil it.
Yeah, maybe.
It's possible.
Nice. Yeah. Okay, awesome. So, after that, Maltzel took it to Cuba, and he was like, all right, time to go back to Europe. Unfortunately, Maltzel... Wait. Cuba. Oh, okay, I understand. He took it to Cuba. I don't think he was able to use it in Cuba. I'll explain why.
Hmm.
And then he died at sea, July 1838, at the age of 65 during his return trip, leaving the machinery with the ship captain. It ultimately found its way into a, like, Pennsylvania or Philadelphia museum, and museum burned down. So the Turk burned
down. It's gone.
And Maltzel never, like, told anyone how it worked, seemingly. But then, years later... Okay, yeah. So essentially this guy... So Maltzel also never revealed how it worked. Now we're in, what, 1830s? Yeah. Okay. The last, like, the child of the last private owner before it went to the Philadelphia Museum wrote an article for Chess Monthly that revealed the secret of
the
Turk.
What a tool.
Yep. Snitch.
Oh, my God.
I think it would have been so awesome if nobody ever found out.
Yeah.
But simply put... While there were cabinets, and he did the whole, like, Kempelen did the whole, like, you know, light the fire, see through it, there was essentially a sliding board, and on the sliding board would sit an operator, and by operator, I mean, like, a chess grandmaster, like, one of the best chess players in the world, would just be sitting on it and would play chess. And so how it worked is that there was a mechanism, there was essentially a small chessboard inside of the Turk, inside the cabinet, and he could see in the roof the chessboard because each piece would move magnets. And so then he could then, like, move this mechanical arm on his little chessboard, and that would then move the Turk's hand appropriately to move the chessboard as well. So very fascinating stuff on how it worked. But the reason why he didn't get to, why I said he didn't get to play in Cuba was because his operator died.
Whoa.
He had yellow fever and died. So he went to Cuba, was really sad because he's like, oh, Turk's not working.
Turk's going
to
lose a bunch of games now.
No one to play it.
Yeah.
And so the kids in Baltimore were actually probably right that they saw the operator exiting the Turk.
It's like a cut the lady in half type of magic trick, right? With like a secret compartment.
Essentially, yeah. Exactly. But it also leveraged magnets like Petelier.
No, much more complex.
Yeah. It had like this robotic arm mechanism that you can move around pieces with. But yeah, very interesting stuff. And it went through the two main users without it ever being discovered. And nobody actually knows who any of the operators were during Kempelen's original tour of Europe. Maltzel maintained a list, it appears, but none of those like operators ever revealed the secret. Like they held it up, even though it was documented that they did operate the Turk.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I want to know what the ELO was.
Mm-hmm. No, it's fascinating. Let's see if that's, like, anywhere out there. Like, what would the ELO of the Turk been?
They had much lower ELOs back then.
I'm sure, like, 2,800 to 3,200.
Oh, that's pretty high. That's just about as high as it gets, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's no ELO power scaling.
Yeah. I mean, bear in mind, this is like an actual human playing chess at the end of the
day.
Yeah, of course. It's not a robot.
Yeah.
So, like, the Turk still couldn't beat, like, Stockfish or something like that.
Yeah, which is, nobody can beat it, unfortunately.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
But still, very fascinating.
Very fascinating.
Stuff.
I did not know about the Turk.
Yeah. The
Incredible.
Turk was a cool one.
Yeah.
But we have 5 minutes. Do you want to save Deep Blue for...
Yeah, we can talk about Deep Blue next time.
Yeah. I'm sorry I took this away
no,
from
No, that's
you.
Okay. We had this planned out.
Yeah.
It was a last-minute addition, like Deep Blue and the Turk all
in
one.
Oh, yeah.
I like talking about chess, and I think this is probably much more enjoyable for listeners
of
out
the
there
format, yeah.
than hearing us say E4,
yeah.
D7.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think we just got to figure out like material for what we can talk about each week. But
definitely. We can always default back to just playing a game of chess. Like,
always.
That's chess.
Yeah. I mean, chess is, like, to my knowledge, the oldest played game today, right? Like,
maybe. I wonder about like
tag or something.
Yeah,
like
I was going to say sport or something. Yeah.
Chess is probably the oldest played board game. No,
I believe you.
No, because like Chutes and Ladders or something seems
no way
probably...
Chutes and Ladders is older than
no
chess,
like
right?
You got to think about it, like these games all got like, you know,
I don't know, chess is like pretty okay, obviously the one that we play right now is like
not
the original chess, but I don't know, like it has this common ancestor with like a million other board games, right? Like Go is the same.
Yeah.
Has the same trajectory as chess.
Shogi, yeah.
I think even like checkers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's like a...
Yeah, okay, yeah. What is the oldest board game in the world? Chess.
Chess.
Chaturanga. Go.
I kind of want to learn Go. That seems really
fun. I do
want
to learn Go. What if we learned Go and played that for a show? Well,
you need
to
get a
to,
Go like board, or I guess you could play online Go. Yeah.
Too. Okay. We can talk about Go.
We can talk about
we
Go.
We should do a chess history episode. Like,
sure.
We talk about like chess's origins and stuff like that. But yeah, no, I actually enjoyed this one. I think it was cool to talk for once on the show. And I think the Turk is just such an interesting story, even if I didn't probably communicate it as best as I could have. I think it's really fascinating stuff. Like, we're in the age of AI, you know?
Mm-hmm.
People in the 1770s were geeking about this fake AI, you know? So, hey, pretty cool. It's true.
They were geeking.
They were geeking.
Yeah.
That's the scientific word. But, yeah, I think it's very fascinating, especially because now, what's up?
All I'm going to say is I know we're going to talk about a Deep Blue next time, but if you look up Deep Blue, like a picture of Deep Blue, its dimensions are very suspicious to me, okay? Because you could very easily fit not even one, but two or maybe three chess grandmasters inside of this Deep Blue. And they never did that candle trick with Deep Blue, okay? Nobody knows what it looks like on the inside. It's just a big old cabinet. So for all we know...
I'm going to be honest. I think the like legitimacy of Deep Blue comes from like no one could beat Garry Kasparov at the time in which it beat him.
You
right?
know, okay, I'll save it for next week. But it did not beat Garry Kasparov.
It didn't?
It did, eventually.
Mm. Okay, no, save it for next week. Save it for next week.
Yeah.
But pretty interesting stuff. What year did it beat Kasparov?
Like,
you know?
90. It's way later.
Post-USSR.
The Soviet Union was already collapsed.
Yeah, no.
Garry Kasparov, by the way, anti-communist.
I know. Yeah.
Fled Russia also after the fall of the Soviet Union, or like late after the fall of the Soviet Union.
I mean, you know, who wouldn't? Honestly?
Yeah.
Like,
no, now he runs some like terrible, like promoting democracy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad. I don't know.
Garry Kasparov is not a friend of Let's Chess.
Not at all. Very few like good chess players out there, I think.
What do you mean, like as people?
Like good people, yeah.
I don't really, you know, I really don't think about like who they are as people.
Yeah, fair enough. It's just like a game.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'm not like sitting there like, man, what are Kevin Durant's politics right now, you know? And I think like that's maybe like you shouldn't separate politics from like games, but I think that chess is like such a faceless game on some level, right? Like you can just look at a board and be like, okay, yeah, chess is happening.
It's true.
But I don't know. Maybe I should research the chess players I like more often. Who's your favorite chess player?
I don't know. I actually don't have a off-top favorite.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Don't know.
Hmm.
I would say Casablanca, but I can't name a single one of his games or even the year that he played. He's a Cuban grandmaster.
Fair.
He's goated.
Yeah. Maybe we can talk about Casablanca chess at some point.
Oh yeah.
That would be
silly.
All right. Up next, Radio Theater. Micah, I believe you have an intro for us.
Okay. Interesting transition into the next show. The following views presented in this hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors of the University of California. I'm going to play some messages, and then Radio Theater is going to happen. So stay tuned if you'd like. Okay. I'm just going to keep talking because there's no background music on. Okay.
Didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day he called me out of the blue, and it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared to give me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call, your presence, your words, your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at veteranscrisisline.net.
Here at KDVS, we're searching for a few public affairs hosts.
Imagine talking on air with underrepresented communities,
reviewing movies,
or even singing live karaoke. In case you're wondering, anyone is eligible.
And as you can tell, the possibilities are endless.
If you're interested, please email us at programming@kdvs.org.
The Alzheimer's Aid Society of Northern California holds support group meetings in Auburn, Carmichael, Orangevale, Roseville, and Sacramento. For more information, call B. Gorman at 916-448-7001.
بخش فرهنگیش الان قوی تر از اونه. اگر
Mohammadi, who is a lecturer in the physics department at Tehran University, as he was going to work, there was an explosion in broad daylight in North Tehran, not far from his house, and he was killed in that blast. A rare, very rare explosion of this type in the Iranian capital. This is not something we see typically in Iran. Now, the accusations now coming from, as you mentioned, Iran's foreign ministry, suggesting that the U.S., Israel, and its so-called mercenaries in Iran could have been responsible for what they're describing as a terrorist act. Now, we don't know a whole lot about this Professor Mohammadi. There have been conflicting claims, both by pro-government factions and by the opposition, which, of course, we have seen are in conflict right now in Iran and have been in conflict for months, as to which camp he could have belonged to. He has